year ago, my secretary received a phone call from a lady in Birmingham, Alabama, who was obviously in deep distress. And so Laurie said to me, "Zig, if you can possibly see her when you're over there, you should, because she's really in trouble and I believe you can help her." Well, I said, "Laurie, I'll be there at least an hour before I speak. Invite her to come backstage." Well, the little lady came backstage. She was between 35 and 40 years old, I would say. And I'm not going to say she was overweight, but she was about 3.5 inches too short. She came in. She was almost literally crying. "Oh," she said, "I'm just so glad to see you." She said, "I've got this job that I absolutely hate. It's just a bad news job. It's a dead-end situation. Nobody down there likes me, and I don't like anybody down there." And she said, "I want to get out of that situation I'm in." And she's the kind of a lady who really looked like the cruise director for the Titanic must have looked, if you know what I mean. I mean, it was obvious somebody had licked all the red off of her candy. And I got the distinct feeling as she walked in that she expected me to verbally put my arm around her and say, "Oh, you poor thing. I know that life has been awfully tough for you, and I know that things have not been going your way, but there are those of us who just must carry the burden for others. And if you'll just be brave, I'm sure that sometimes in the distant future, things will work out all right for you." And I had the distinct impression that she thought I was going to be bidding her goodbye in a little while, and she was going to have her handkerchief out, and she'd be wiping the tears from her eyes, saying, "Oh, you've just helped me so much." But if I'd followed that routine, I would have abandoned everything and betrayed everything in which I believe. When I'm confronted with a situation and I need an answer right now, I don't go through the routine of praying to the God of Abraham and Jacob and Isaac. I just say, "Lord, I got a problem. Help." And that's about the situation I went through right there. And almost instinctively, because I don't nearby claim to be this smart, so I know the answer had to have come outside of myself. Almost immediately it was there, and in my mind it was what I needed to say. So I looked at her, and I said, "Yes, and the unfortunate thing is that your situation is undoubtedly going to get a whole lot worse." Now, I did not say it unkindly. It was with gentleness, and yet there was firmness in the way I said it. And she looked at me, and I couldn't have shocked her anymore if I'd hit her in the face with a bucket of ice water. And she said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "It's probably going to get worse, ma'am, because I don't believe the company you're working for can keep you on the payroll with your current attitude." And now those little tears started to form in her eyes, and she said, "Well, what am I going to do?" I said, "You really want to know?" She said, "I certainly do. That's the reason I'm here. I understand you help people, but you sure haven't been much help to me so far." And I said, "Well, I got an idea, and I'll be delighted to share it with you." She said, "Well, I wish you would." And I said, "Well, what I want you to do tonight when you go home, I want you to take out a sheet of paper, and I want you to list all of the things you like about your job and all of the things you like about the people you work with." Well, she said, "That'll be easy. I don't like nothing about my job, and I don't like nothing about the people I work with." And I said, "Now, wait a minute. Let me ask you a question. Do they pay you for your work?" Why, she said, "Of course they pay me." I said, "You mean you don't want to be paid for your work?" Why, she said, "That's crazy. Of course I want to be paid." I said, "Okay, the first thing you like about your job is the fact they pay you for it. Now, get your sheet of paper out. We might as well write it down right now. Second thing, let me ask you, do they pay you above average for what you do, below average for what you do, or about average for what you do?" She said, "Well, I got to confess, they pay me above average for what I do." I said, "You mean to tell me you'd rather work somewhere where they pay you below average?" She said, "Why, of course not. That's crazy." I said, "Of course it is. The second thing you like about your job is the fact they pay you above average. Now, the third thing, that they give you a vacation with pay?" She said, "Why, certainly. Everybody gives you vacations with pay." I said, "You mean to tell me you'd rather work and not get a vacation with pay?" Why, she said, "That's silly." I said, "Of course it's silly. The third thing you like about your job is they give you a vacation with pay. Number four, that they give you life insurance, accident insurance, health insurance, hospitalization insurance." Why, she said, "Yes, they do." I said, "You mean to tell me you'd rather work for a place that gives you no insurance?" Why, she said, "Of course not." I said, "You're right. The fourth thing you like about your job, they give you insurance." I said, "The place you work, does it have a roof over it, a floor under it, and walls around it?" Why, she said, "Certainly." I said, "You mean to tell me you'd rather work at a place where you work outdoors 12 months out of the year?" She said, "That's silly." I said, "Of course it is. The fourth thing you like about your job is the fact they give you a building something to work in. Now, let me ask you a question. Do they heat it in the wintertime and air condition in the summertime? Well, she said, certainly. I said, you mean to tell me they work in a place where it was cold in the winter and hot in the summer? Well, she said, of course not. I said, the fifth thing you like about your job is the fact they give you a comfortable place to work. Number six, do they give you a place to park your car? Well, she said, certainly. I said, you mean to tell me they work in a place where they make you park your car on the street and somebody might come along and run over you? Well, she said, of course not. I said, the sixth thing you like about your job is they give you a place to park your car. When we got through, we discovered there were 23 things she liked about the place where she was working. Now, I said, what I want you to do tonight when you go home, I want you to take this list, and I want you to get right in front of the mirror, and I want you to look into the mirror at your own eyes, and I want you to out loud read all of the things you like about your job. When you get up tomorrow morning, I want you to repeat the process. I was back over there about 3 weeks later, conducting a sales training seminar, and lo and behold, who do I see sitting down on the front row with this little lady, grinning just like she'd walked through a swinging door on somebody else's push. And I said to her, well, how are things going? And she just smiled even more broadly, and she said, well, I'm still not completely out of the woods, but she said, you cannot believe how much those people down there have changed. Now, rather obviously, the only thing that had changed was her. Before you change your world, you change you. Before you change your husband, your wife, your child, your employer, your employee, the neighborhood, the community, your church, America, before you change it, you change you and your own attitude. There are over 30,000 schools in America, and they'll teach how to do everything from trimming toenails and pulling teeth to cutting hair and running earth-moving equipment. But there's not a single school in America which is going to teach you how to be any better than mediocre unless you've got the right mental attitude. One of my favorite stories talking about attitude has to do with an incident that took place a number of years ago on a railroad. It was a brutally hot day, and some laborers were working out on the tracks, and a private car, as part of the train, pulled up and pulled off over on the siding. So a window came up, and a loud voice boomed out, Dave! Hey, Dave Anderson, is that you? And one of the laborers looked up and said, yeah, Jim, it sure is. And he said, well, why don't you come on in? I'd like to talk to you a little while. Well, old Dave was delighted to get out of that hot sun into the air-conditioned comfort of that beautiful private railroad car that was there. So he went in, they visited about an hour, and then they, you know, warmly passed the time of day, and as they were leaving, they embraced, as old friends are inclined to do, and old Dave went back out to work. Well, the crew out there said, hey, Dave, isn't that Jim Murphy, the president of the railroad? And Dave said, yep, sure is. Been friends for over 25 years. And he said, well, how in the world did you happen to know the president of the railroad? Well, Dave said, old Jim and I went to work the same day on this railroad. And they said, man, how does it happen then that you're still out here working in the hot sun and Jim Murphy is the president of the railroad? Well, he said, it's very simple to explain if you think about it. When I started to work for this railroad, I went to work for $3.50 an hour. But Jim Murphy went to work for the railroad. There's your difference, you see. There's your difference. I'm really talking about an attitude. You see, competition, as you know, in the game of life, is powerful tough for about 40 hours a week. Now, after that, competition dramatically drops. And you're going to see the people who really go to the top, the people who do things with their life, are the people who go beyond what the average man or woman is willing to do. As most of you know, we have a program in schools called the I Can Course. I talk about it at the drop of a hat. As a matter of fact, even whether you wear a hat or not, I talk about the I Can Course. We talk about this very thing called attitude. We talk about honesty, character, and integrity. And let me give you just a basic thought as we weave them together about attitude. See, teenage unemployment is incredibly high. As a matter of fact, national unemployment is high.
But let's say we've got a 16-year-old youngster who's been taught the principles which we teach in ICANN, and it's now being taught from kindergarten all the way through college. And we've got this youngster who applies for the job. He's age 16, and the employer said, "What experience have you had?" If the youngster says, "I've had 16 years experience in telling the truth, 16 years experience in being enthusiastic, 16 years experience in building a winning attitude, 16 years experience in knowing that the only way you're going to be able to keep me on the payroll is for you to make a profit. And therefore, knowing that if I don't contribute to your profit, that you're not going to be able to pay me, and I've got 16 years experience, therefore, of doing more than I'm paid to do, so you'll have the profit to pay me. I've had 16 years experience in developing the kind of attitude which says that you can get everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want." You know what? I believe unemployment is a solvable problem. I believe we can have these kids working if we start teaching them the very basic things. And attitude is one of the basic things. I did a study at Harvard University several years ago. Discovered that 85% of the reason people get jobs and get ahead in those jobs is because they have the right mental attitude. But they discovered something else in that study. They discovered that in our educational institutions in America, that 90% of our time and educational dollars are spent teaching facts, figures, and formulas, and 10% of our educational time and dollars are spent teaching how to build a winning attitude. But they said, "Hold the phone, that's misleading." Because of that 10% time they spend, 99% of that is spent with the athlete and the athletic event. The band, the parade, the cheerleaders, the assemblies, the articles in the school paper, the banners, and all of those things. And the average student in our American educational institutions today, the average student has less than 1% of their time and educational dollars directed at building the right mental attitude. That's the reason we get so gung-ho about this. That's the reason in the Born to Win series we talk about attitude as much as we do, because attitude is that little thing that makes the big difference. You know, in life, it's a series of little things that make the difference. You call a girl a kitten, she'll love you. You call her a cat, you got a problem. Bad problem. It's one thing to say to a girl that she looks like the breath of spring. It's something entirely different to tell her that she looks like the end of a long, hard winter. It's the little things. If my watch is 4 hours wrong, no problem. I can look at it and instantly know it's 4 hours wrong. If it's 4 minutes wrong, that's a horse of a different color. Because, you see, I got an airplane this very afternoon to catch at 5:30. Now, my watch is 4 minutes wrong, and I get there at 5:34. Well, you see the problem. Because I made a deal with the airlines about 9 years ago that if I wasn't there when they got ready to go, that they were just to go ahead without me. And I found out last year in Dallas that they live up to their end of the agreement, too. And I also found out those dudes are easier to catch before they leave the ground. It's the little things that make the big difference. It's the part of the blanket which hangs over the bed that keeps you warm. And if you don't believe that, you've never been in the service and been short-sheeted. I'll just tell you that right now. Little things make the difference. I know many of you recognize the name of the great racehorse Nashua. Won over $1 million back in the days when $1 million was a lot of money. Now, Nashua, in winning $1 million, if you think about it, mathematically, $1 million horse, as versus a $10,000 horse, you can buy 100 $10,000 horses with $1 million. And the reason is pretty simple, isn't it? You see, $1 million horse runs 100 times as fast as a $10,000 horse, doesn't he? Isn't that ridiculous? He only runs twice as fast, doesn't he? And isn't that absurd? It's only 25% faster. Or is it 2%? Or is it 1%? How much faster is a $1 million horse than a $10,000 horse? Really? Not a lot, is there? several years ago at the Arlington Futurity, the difference between the winning horse and the losing horse that race is a mile and an eighth in length, which, as you well know, is 71,280 inches. You did know that, didn't you? Well, the difference between the winning horse and the losing horse was 1 inch. 1 inch out of 71,280, and yet that 1 inch was worth $100,000. I've been in the world of selling all of my life, and I can tell you the difference between making a sale and missing a sale is about that much. But the commission you make on the almost sale is zero. See, that's kind of like selling and closing the sale along those lines. That's kind of like the fact, you know, that close doesn't count except in horseshoes and grenades. I mean, in the game of life, you either do it or you don't do it. In the 1974 Kentucky Derby, they paid the winning jockey a grand total of $27,000. Now, the jockey who came in on the horse that finished fourth, substantially less than 2 seconds later, received $30. And people said, "Is that right?" And I said, "No, it ain't right, but that's the way they do it. Always has been, always will be, and we're not going to alter the rules. It's the little things that make the difference, and attitude is one of those differences." A number of years ago, during the 1930s, when minor league baseball was tremendously powerful and popular, the San Antonio team had a manager named O'Reilly, and he was one of the smarts in the game. His team, the year before, had 7 players who hit over 300. And therefore, everybody knew that San Antonio would win the pennant. No question about it. Hands down, they would win that pennant. But they lost the first game and the second, the third and the fourth on their way to the pennant. As a matter of fact, the pitcher was blaming the catcher, who was blaming the shortstop, who was blaming the outfielders, who was blaming the first baseman. Everybody was blaming everybody else. At the end of 21 games, they had lost 18 of those 21 games. They were playing Dallas, one of the weakest hitting teams in the league, and they were beaten 1-0. A scratch single by the pitcher is the only hit that San Antonio was able to get. And now they're going to play the second game in the series. At that time, there was a faith healer there, a man named Slater, who they said could work miracles. And O'Reilly knew that his team was just suffering from a bad case of stinking thinking. He knew all they really needed was a good little checkup from the neck up. So about an hour before the game, he ran into the clubhouse. He took a wheelbarrow and said to each of the players, "Give me your 2 best bats." He loaded those bats in his wheelbarrow and said, "I'll be back just before game time. Don't worry about a thing, fellas. We're going to win the game today. We're going to win the pennant." He was really excited. He came back about 5 minutes before game time and he said, "Fellas, I got the greatest news ever. I've taken these bats to Mr. Slater. He's put his blessings on them. He tells me that all we got to do is step up to the plate, rear back, and take that cut. He says we're going to win the game, and he says we're going to win the pennant." He said, "Man alive, all you got to do is believe you're going to hit that ball, step up, and you're going to knock it out of there." Now remember, the day before they'd been beaten 1-0. Their only hit was a scratch single. But today, same 2 teams on the same field, everything else being equal, today they got 37 base hits. They scored 22 runs, 11 home runs. I don't think I need to tell you, but they did win the game. As a matter of fact, they went on to win the pennant by the biggest margin in minor league history. Now, what I'm really saying here is that your attitude makes a difference. But, ladies and gentlemen, there are some things that we need to understand. We live in a world which often is negative. We live in a cat-kicking world. Some of you might have remembered Mr. B. Mr. B called a meeting one day for all of his people. He said, "Now, I notice some of you come to work late. I notice some of you leave early. And maybe that's my fault. Maybe I've not set for you the kind of an example that I should have been setting. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start coming to work early. I'm going to start leaving late. I'm going to start providing you with the kind of leadership which will enable us to build the kind of company we need to have. We're going to be a giant in this industry." Oh, it was quite a little speech. And his intentions were good. But about a week later, he was out at the country club, became engrossed in a conversation, forgot about the time. All of a sudden, he looked at his watch. He said, "Oh my goodness, I'm due back at the office right now." He hopped up, made a mad dash to his car, hopped in, scratched off, burned rubber, doing about 90 miles an hour down the freeway, and the long arm of the law came along and gave him a ticket. Now, you're talking about a man who was upset. Mr. B was absolutely furious. He said, "This is ridiculous. Here I am, a peaceful, taxpaying, law-abiding citizen, minding my business, and what does this dude do? He comes along and gives me a ticket. What he ought to be doing is out looking for robbers and murderers and arsonists and leave us peaceful, taxpaying citizens alone." Oh, he was really upset. When he got back to the office, he was about an hour late. And he did what management has done since the beginning of time. Every time they get their hand caught in the cookie jar, they always say, "Look yonder." And then nobody looks here. In a very loud voice, he called his sales manager and he said, "Come on in. I want to talk to you about the Armstrong account. You've been fitting with that thing 6 weeks. You could have closed the deal a dozen times. Just come on in and tell me either yes, you did get it, or no, you did not get it." Oh, he was really upset. Sales manager quietly came in, closed the door behind him, ducked his head and said, "Mr. B, I hate to tell you this," but he said, "I lost that deal." He said, "I thought I had it. I thought it was sold, but something happened and it came unglued. And if you think Mr. B was upset before, you should have seen him now. He literally hit the ceiling." He said, "This is ridiculous. Why, for 18 years you've been my sales manager. For 18 years I've been depending on you to bring in new business. And now we have a chance to get the biggest account of all. And what do? You blow it." Well, let me tell you something, friend. Just because you've been here 18 years doesn't mean you got a lifetime contract. Now you're going to replace that business or I'm going to replace you. Oh, he was really upset. But if you think he is upset, you should have seen that sales manager. He goes storming out of there, slammed the door behind him, stomping his feet, muttering under his breath, "This is ridiculous. Why, for 18 years I've been running this company. As a matter of fact, I'm the only man who ever brings in a new business in. If it wasn't for me, the company had gone down the tube 15 years ago. And now just because I missed one lousy sale, he uses a cheap trick, he threatens to fire me. This is ridiculous." Oh, he was upset. He called his secretary in. He said, "Those 5 letters I gave you this morning, did you get them out yet? Are you going to give me some lousy excuse about you having something else to do?" She said, "Don't you remember? You told me that the heat account took precedence over everything else. That's what I've been working on." He said, "Don't give me any lousy excuses. I told you I wanted those letters out, and I want them out today. And if you can't get them out, I'll get me somebody who can." Oh, he was really upset. But if you think he is upset, you should have seen that secretary. She goes storming out of there, slammed the door behind her back, muttering under her breath, "This is really ridiculous. Why, I'm the only one who ever really gets any work done around here. I do more than any 3 people on the payroll. I've been his secretary 11 years. If it hadn't been for me, this company gone broke years ago. And him threatening to fire me, as much as I know about him, who does he think he's kidding anyhow?" Oh, she was upset. She went out to the switchboard operator and said, "I got 5 letters. I want you to get them out." Now, I know that ordinarily you don't do this, but you don't do anything else anyhow but sit out here and occasionally answer the telephone and get out a little work when need be. And I want these letters out, and I'm going to tell you right now, if you can't get them out, I'll get me somebody who can. Oh, I'll tell you, she was upset. But if you think she is upset, you should have seen that switchboard operator. She said, "This is ridiculous. They don't do anything in the bank but gossip, drink coffee, talk on the telephone. Every once in a while, I get a little work out. And the minute they get behind, they come out here to throw it on my desk and say, 'Now you're going to get it out, or I'm going to fire you.' And I'm already doing more than the 3 people here. As a matter of fact, it hadn't been me that had gone under years ago. This is not fair." Oh, she was really upset. But she got the letters out. Got home, she was still furious. She walked in, slammed the door behind her back, walked in the den, and the first thing she saw was her 11-year-old boy laying there on the floor watching television. Second thing she saw was a big rip right across the seat of his britches. She said, "Son, how many times do I have to tell you? When you come home from school, put your play clothes on. Mother has a hard enough time today supporting you and sending you through school. Now, because you've disobeyed me, you're going to go upstairs right now. Going to be no supper tonight, no television for the next 3 weeks." Oh, she was really upset. But if you think she's upset, you should have seen that little boy. He hopped up, muttering under his breath, "This is terrible. Why, I was doing something for my own mother. It was an accident. Could have happened to anybody. And she doesn't even give me a chance to explain it all." He was upset. And about that time, his tomcat walked right in front of him, which was a mistake. Little boy gives him a big old kick and says, "You get out of here. You've probably been up to some no good yourself." Now, folks, if you think about it for a moment, that tomcat was the only creature involved who could not have altered that series of events. And if you think about it for another minute, wouldn't it have been so much better if Mr. B had just gone directly from the country club to that switchboard operator's house and kicked that cat himself? You see, the truth of the matter is we live in a negative, cat-kicking world. Don't you ever go in a restaurant and sit down for a cup of coffee? And you sit there, and you sit there, and you sit there. And finally, you say to the waitress, "Miss, could I have a cup of coffee?" And she jumps down your throat. "Can't you see I'm busy? I'll get to you as quick as I can. Do you say we don't have to bite my head off about it, do you? I mean, do you let her pull you down to her level? Or can you understand it's got nothing to do with you? Somebody had just stopped by and kicked her cat long before you got there. You ever get caught in the traffic jam? Traffic 3 blocks in front of you, traffic 3 blocks behind you, and some dude right behind you sits on his horn, and you turn around, "Can't you see we got traffic up in front of us?" I mean, do you understand it's got nothing to do with you? Somebody has been kicking his cat all day long, but are you going to let him pull you down to his level? You ever go home after a magnificent day? I mean, everything has just gone beautifully. You've sold everybody you've called on. Or you had a fantastic day working down at the office, or teaching the class, or serving as an MD, or whatever it is that you do. Everything has gone well, and you come in whistling and singing, "Hi, honey, how you doing? What do you mean what I'm doing? You told me you're going to be home an hour ago. If you've been putting up with, I've been putting up with all day long, you wouldn't be feeling so good either. Now, where have you been? What have you been doing?" Can you understand it's got nothing to do with you? Somebody's been kicking your cat all day long. I want you to think about this for a moment. The bum on the Bowery and the mayor of your city have got a lot in common. The bum on the Bowery and the mother of the year have got a lot in common. The bum on the Bowery and the most successful, happy individual you'll ever meet in your life have got a lot in common. Every human being alive suffers disappointments, defeats, frustrations, and setbacks all of their life. But the difference is the way they react to those disappointments and defeats and setbacks. There is your difference. You see, the truth of the matter is, a lot of people go around letting an awful lot of other people kick their cats. But what I'm saying to you is that, you see, not only will you let them kick your cat, if you're not powerful, careful, you'll let them steal your dream. That's the danger right there.